Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 Hi FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I'm in studio today, and it's a lovely, friendly atmosphere coming in here. And when I told them that my guest today was Classy Vessels, Makundi, who's our station manager, said he is a fan of yours, Classy. So welcome, Classy Vessels.
Nice to be here.
It's so nice to have you. Classy and I have been together a few times on radio, and if you'd like to pick up our previous podcasts, please go on to podcast, the Chai FM podcast under Sue Jackson, and look up Classy Vessels. Now, Classy is a transition coach, and he helps high-powered executives find meaning in their lives. He was a former chairman he was in the corporate world for 25 years, and a former chairman of a very large advertising agency in Johannesburg. And he reached a crossroads where he asked himself, how can I still be useful after I reach 50? Well, that was a few years ago, Classy, and since then you have fulfilled so many of the dreams that you set for yourself. One of the major ones was 18 years ago you started a street school, Journeys of Discovery, and you've taken hundreds of people on spiritual workshops to the Tibetan exile community in Nepal. We're just going to ad break quickly, and then I'll be back.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 Hi FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Classy Vessels. And Classy, I would actually like to get straight back to you. You and I met many years ago. We're both logotherapists, and we're both great fans of Viktor Frankl. But you have used his work and expanded on it. Tell me about how you have used it in your trips to the mountains.
Sue, it's amazing. In your opening, you said, you know, I was in advertising before, and it's coming up for 20 years since I left the world of advertising, and I spent 25 years in that industry, so you can do the math. But, you know, I moved from creating stories for brands to the stories people tell themselves and the stories people create for their own lives. So taking people to India and Nepal, the trips to base camp, is in a big way helping people create a new story for their own lives. So, you know, in just thinking of our talk today, I've prepared 7 steps. We can call it the sort of a ladder of life kind of thing, using the mountains as a metaphor. And in our conversation today, we could sort of, you know, in a way, go up the mountain, pretend we're going to Everest Base Camp, and use that as an analogy for our own lives.
I'd love you to take us up that ladder. Would you mind going through it with us? We need it in this time of division and strife. Take us on the ladder.
Shall we start? Start? So maybe as a kickoff, I say choose your mountain. You know, so many people are busy. They're busy chasing money, status, approval, success, but are they climbing the right mountain, and are they climbing their mountain? You know, so many people live other people's lives. They live lives where they do what is expected of them. I mean, we all have to do what's expected of us, but sometimes people take that to the extreme and they live a life that is somebody else's life, not their own life. So just as a first step, like, whose mountain am I climbing? You know, and how do I make sure that I'm going up the right mountain? So that is just as a foundational thing. The second one, the second step is, we all go to mountains and we carry backpacks. And what do we carry on our backpack or in our backpack? And we carry guilt, we carry resentment, we carry fear, we carry expectations, we carry dreams. But sometimes the journey becomes easier, not so much because we are stronger, but we know what to put down. We don't carry unnecessary weight. I mean, weight is such a thing, and emotional weight is can be such a draining. So, the question here is, what am I struggling to let go of? I have a lot of tasks, a lot of things, a lot of issues, but what am I carrying that is actually unnecessary, negative weight?
So what can I leave along the way before I go on to the
Exactly,
next rung?
ex exactly, exactly. And what do I wake up every morning? There's this weird statistic that every day, 85, 80, 85, 90% of our thoughts are exactly the same as yesterday. Now, there's something about that that's useful. We can't every day have a groundhog day like in the movie and, start on a clean slate. But sometimes we repeat things and we carry things that are dead weight. And going up a mountain, every morning you carry in your backpack, you cannot carry everything. You have to leave some things behind because you're just not strong enough to carry it. But emotionally, it doesn't quite work like that. We add stuff to our plate, emotional stuff to our plates that doesn't deserve to be there, but we shoulder it, we carry it, and some of it is useful, but some of it is not useful. So this thing about what do I put in my backpack is, from an emotional perspective is quite an important one, I think.
Very important. And it's what Sir Edmund Hillary says when he says, it's not the mountain we conquer, but ourselves. And so, go on with the next rung. So we're looking at our backpack.
So the next one is acclimatization. When you go into altitude, so going up to base camp is, imagine going up a flight of stairs with somebody having a hand over your face, over your mouth and your nose. You cannot breathe properly. It is acclimatization is a thing, and the thin air affects us. So the question here is, we're so busy, we're always chasing, but how do we accept? So I think what I'm referring with acclimatization is, how do we get used to certain things? How do we acclimatize and get used to certain pressure? But now this is a delicate thing, not to get used. I'm not talking about accepting mediocrity, but accepting what cannot be changed and making peace with what cannot be changed. Because so often, if you think of those three spheres of things that I can control, that is within my control, things that I can influence, and then things that's completely beyond my control. And how much attention I spend on things beyond my control. So many people get so excited about things they absolutely cannot control. And there's something very useless, about that. So
And so
the
much
idea here
energy is
is to,
expended on it.
absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there was this joke of a friend of mine who gave his, they got the newspaper every day, and one day the newspaper didn't arrive, and his old dad wanted his newspaper. So he took an old copy and he gave it to the dad. And the dad read this newspaper as it was today's news. And he got all excited all again about news that were months old. And often we like that. We simply cannot get used to and move on for things that are, beyond our control. We can't do anything, and rather focus on what we can influence and what we can control. So acclimatization in a way is that.
Okay, and then the next rung.
So the next one, oof, we're going through them fast, the summit illusion. So I want to get the promotion. I want to buy a new house. When I retire, this is going to happen. When I get that thing, this is going to happen. But when you arrive, now that quote about Hillary, you also, made the quote. And when he got to the top, I don't know, I don't think it was him that said it, but the climber who said, when I got to the top, I realized the summit was inside me. The summit wasn't the mountain. It's not that. We chase things and then we get the things and then we realize, still me. You know, I still have my same anxieties and my issues and my fears and my hopes, and it just changes shape. So we chase goals and we chase things only to realize that that is not actually what it's about. You know, so the journey, so Frankl will tell us that the meaning is not found in the summit, it's found in the journey, the little things that happen, the little wins, the little accomplishments, the little touches of every day is the journey, not the is where the meaning is buried, not necessarily the big thing at the end of the trip.
How true. I mean, you know, as you say, never enough, because so often it is those little things that we keep chasing and chasing, and it's never enough. I'll be back with you shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. My guest today is Klaasie Wessels, and our topic is the mountain's echo. If you'd like to WhatsApp us, please do so on 061-895-1019. Klaasie, I'm back with you. I did actually get a message when I put it out on different social media posts that I was having you. And they said they couldn't think of anyone better to take them on this journey, which they're finding very difficult at the moment. So, you know, I think you're telling us now about the ladder of life and how we can keep climbing each rung, and what we've got to leave behind and what we have to look forward to is so important right now. So please go on. Let's go on with your ladder.
So number five, I listed walking at your own pace. You know, when you're in the mountains, you cannot walk at somebody else's pace. It's gonna tire you too much. Even if the person is, whether the person is slower or faster than you, you need to walk at your own pace. Now, we live in a world where our pace is sometimes artificial. You know, we get so busy, we get overwhelmed by things, we get so rushed, and then we lose our own natural rhythm. And you know, sometimes we have to adjust. We live in a world where we can't just every day, every time, you know, carry on with our own pace, but there are times where we need to make sure whose dial, you know, am I following. And you know, walking at your own pace, it's not always in the mountains. The fastest person is not only the only people who got there safely or will get there, you know, in time. Slow will also get you there. Sometimes we need to slow down. And the slowing down is not necessarily reducing your to-do list, but it is also building in time, you know, like mindfulness moments. It takes, no, let me put it this way, nobody does not have 1 or 2 minutes every day to slow down and sit and have a mindfulness moment. And when you have a cup of coffee, to drink that cup of coffee and enjoy the coffee. And when you eat that meal, enjoy the meal. But you know, Sue, how many times do we sit down in a restaurant or at a meal, we talk about a meal, and then we discuss another nice meal we had in another nice restaurant, and we forget the meal that's right in front of us.
That's so true.
So slowing down, it's got two aspects, like follow the right pace, but also have moments to just stop and do nothing. Just enjoy what is right in front of you.
And you know, just on that note, Klaasie, you brought up a memory of mine. I remember being in the mountains in the Drakensberg, and I was young. I was probably about 10 or 11, and with my parents and family members. And we came to the Tugela River, and there'd been a storm the night before, and it was raging quite badly. And it was a river that I'd often crossed over, you know, on the boulders. But this particular time, it was raging. The waters were raging. And I froze. I couldn't go across those boulders. And my brother said, "Oh, stop being a sissy. Keep moving." I couldn't keep moving. And then my father's hand came out to me and he said, "You can do this. Just focus on my hand and look at me and just keep moving." And you know, as you're talking, his voice has sort of come back to me through the years of, I can do it. And sometimes that's something we have to remind ourselves of, that yes, it might look incredibly hard and I don't think I could ever make it across, but I can do it. And sometimes we need a hand to hold ours, to step across a raging river.
Wow, so we're so in sync. In fact, that is the next point. The sixth step
yes.
is nobody climbs alone.
Oh, wow.
And here you've just so beautifully explained it.
Gosh, Classy, that's interesting. You've frozen for a moment. Okay, just talk.
In the mountains, the Sherpas are always the people that help you navigate. They carry your stuff and bring you your tea and make sure that you sort it. And, you know, they're there to protect and take that hand like your dad did over that river.
Mm.
So none of us move alone. We cannot move alone. So who are the Sherpas in our lives?
So true.
So that is a question. And, you know, I'm now going to say men. I'm not sure if it's really true, but the saying goes that men doesn't ask for help. And it is so unnecessary. We all need help. And we all need to ask for help. And this thing where I'm going to do it on my own and I'll do it my way and I'm, you know, invincible, it doesn't hold. We all need some help. So nobody climbs alone.
So true. Wow. And you know, you are a transition coach, so I'm quite sure this is one of the things that you often have to work with, that let's actually see who is helping you along the way, because as you say, men and more women are pretending they don't need help. They can do it alone. We can't go through this life on our own, and it's beginning to show more and more that we need support along the way. So go on with number seven.
So number seven is now the mountain of mortality, that here I am, I'm in this life. I have this special God-given gift of life. How am I spending this life? This is a step away. This is like, it's not a point you reach, but it's a moment that we need to create moments to consider the final summit. What am I doing with my life? Because we get so wrapped up in the day-to-day drama, and we do not consider that here I am, whatever age, you know, whether you're 30 or, you know, 40 or 20 or 60, over the full trajectory of your life, you know, how is today fitting in, and what are you making, and how are you living this life as if the final summit, you're busy with the final summit. Every day you are crafting the final summit. I mean, Frankl, you know, says that life can be meaningful right up to the moment of death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember Sue, my brother, he passed away from cancer. And I was still in advertising. And I was standing at his bed 2 days before he died. And I was standing at the feet and I was looking at him. And he's got this blue eyes. And I looked at him. And he said to me, no, he's spoken Afrikaans, but he said to me, my life had no meaning. But now the words he used could indicate it made no sense or it had no meaning. Now the two are not the same.
No.
So life not making sense is one thing, but life having no meaning is something else. So I'm not sure what he meant, but I was still in advertising. I couldn't help it. And I just said to him, but that can't be possible. You know, in Afrikaans now, but that made such an impression on me. I thought, and it was instrumental in me leaving advertising.
How old was your brother at the time?
He was 61.
Mm.
So the thought was, how does one die like this?
Mm.
You know, we're all going to die, but how do you die with this question as your final thoughts as you lie there?
Mm.
So this final summit of what am I busy with? What am I doing here? You know, what mountain am I climbing? Make sure that you know, I'm making the most. I mean, that is sort of the final rung, is to just make sure this effort that you're making every day is worth it.
Mm. And in other words, looking at our own gifts, you know, as you say that about your brother, I'm also thinking about my work with people dying. And with my own family members and them finding their own meaning at the end of their lives. You know, I think it is something that we often have to question each day, actually, not to come to the end of our lives and say, what has been the meaning of my life? Because each day demands something different of us, Classy. You know, I just know for myself at the moment, my family, a lot of my family went back to Israel, and I had to relook at, okay, so how am I going to fill my day with missing them as I was and as I am? And what can I bring to my own life to lift myself up and to lift others as well? Because it's never just about ourselves. If it is just about ourselves, it's a very lonely life, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this it rings so true to your program. I mean, finding human. So in the end, how did we become human? And how did we live as humans? You know, and what kind of human was I? It's not about reaching goals. And that implicitly means reaching out, you know, holding someone else, carrying someone else, helping someone else. We're not alone, yeah. And we shouldn't be.
No, we shouldn't be. But I think it's also being honest with ourselves. Because, you know, someone the other day said to me she was so sick of pretending that she was fine when she was far from fine. And I said to her, well, you know, who do you have to pretend that you're fine to? And she mentioned who she had to pretend she was fine to. And it was a huge responsibility that she had taken on. And I often think to myself, maybe we need to be more honest with people in our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, the people who can't handle our own sadness or our own, perhaps they might see it as a weakness, we sometimes have to let go of those people. And see, as you say, the serpers who are walking with us, who are walking beside us, you know, who are helping us when we need help, and who are we helping when they need help? Don't you agree?
Absolutely, absolutely. Can I tell you a story that happened in India? Mm-hmm. Do we have a minute?
Yeah, we have.
So we were in Varanasi. So Varanasi is on the Ganges. It's the kind of place. So my daughter went there on her own. And I haven't been there. And she came back and she said Varanasi was a place where she felt most removed from everything she knew. Mm. So Varanasi is that kind of place. So on the river, there's cremations happening. Everywhere you look, there's an open cremation happening.
Oh, wow.
So now we're walking. I'm there with a group. And it's a group of adults from South Africa. And afterwards, we're walking along the Ganges. And afterwards, a woman came to me. She said, I want to tell you what happened. So she was walking behind me. I didn't see this. And we were standing apparently at a place where we were looking at a fire pyre where there was a body burning. And a child came up, an Indian child came up to this, her name was Anne, the adult lady. And an Indian child came up to her and in sign language said to her, why are you so sad? So the Indian child, a little six-year-old, was inside and said, why are you so sad? Now, Anne could understood, somehow she could understand sign language. And she there was in sign language communicating with this Indian child. Ran, it's just like out of nowhere kind of thing. And the human touch of a six-year-old coming up to a foreign Westerner and in sign language, engage and say, hey, why are you so sad? I mean, it's like,
how beautiful.
You know, in that guiltiness, there's something touching in that. Eh?
Absolutely. Oh, that is the most amazing story. And I think it's sometimes in those moments of unexpected care that touch our souls the most. I mean, your daughter must have been incredibly moved by witnessing that.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But, you know, this random, I mean, now we're jumping to random acts of kindness. I mean, here I am. I can, after this conversation with you, you know, I can call three or four mates that I haven't spoken to in a long time and just say, how are you? I'm thinking of you. It's a one-minute conversation. But you know what? It makes such a difference.
It does.
Reaching out. Little touch. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Just touching somebody else. Just keeping the connection going.
Just recognizing that they have a place in your life. It's
And the thing with the mountains, you know, often we're in the mountains, we're removed, there's no signal, we're removed from people, we're removed from places we're comfortable with, we're in uncomfortable spaces. We are forced to appreciate the small little things like, you know, water running out of a tap. And we come back and we take things for granted. But when we're in the mountains, we are reminded of not taking things for granted. We are forced to appreciate the little things that we every day take for granted. So maybe we can put ourselves in a space and just look around and realize, you know, the sunshine, the clean air. I shouldn't take clean air for granted. You know, I shouldn't take water running out of a tap for granted. You know,
We
hot water, I
can't.
can make myself a cup of tea. Exactly. I
Yeah.
can now go and make myself a cup of tea. I don't have to build a fire. How cool is
And
that?
you're living in Stellenbosch now, Classy. So, I mean, how beautiful. You can walk out and see your beautiful vista in front of you. You know, I was thinking about when I wanted you on my program, I was thinking about your different experiences with the yogis in India and the Tibetan monks that you've actually meditated with, and tell me what did that, how did those change your life, those encounters?
To sum that up in a sentence is, I will call it like this. It doesn't have to be like this. So whatever position you're in or anybody in, what they have shown me is that it doesn't have to be like this. It can be different. Because I think that often we get into a position of stuckness. We feel stuck. We feel where there's no way to move. There's no way out. You know, it's too late, or whatever the case may be. And what they have shown me is that it doesn't have to be like this. The second thing, what they showed me is make it simple. You know, one of their first, you know, often we come and we have audiences with the monks and we have discussions, and somebody will ask a question, and then the monk would say, "Can you make it shorter? That question you
Wow,
have." Because often our questions are so
it's
complicated.
so true. And through the years, Classy, have you made friends with them? Have you gone back each year or each time and encountered the same people?
Definitely. In fact, look, I went there the first time in 27. Two, sorry, 2007. 2007, I went there for the first time. So, give you an example. In COVID, I thought, okay, now I can't go to India anymore. I can't take people. What am I going to do? So I thought I'm going to bring them here. And in April, I think it was 21 April when we started. I don't know when lockdown started in South Africa, but I got a hold of a monk. I called him and I said, "Can you join me on Zoom sessions?" And we had 85 Zoom sessions between April and I think it was October. So every week, like almost like your thing, you know, your show. And I invited people for free to just come and talk to the monk. And he did it for free. You know, he's just, it's easy. It's we know, still have contact, we text, we share some jokes. Every now and then they will ask how I am and we'll communicate.
So if people want to tap into that knowledge, who should they, how do they contact? Is it on website or?
Look, the conversations are all on my Street School YouTube channel, but they can contact me and I can, you know, there's an office in South Africa also. There's a monk in South Africa, you know, appointed person from the office of the Dalai Lama. So they no, we can get hold of them. It's not a problem.
We're going to
It's
give
not.
your website off at the end. We just want to get back to you in a minute.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and my guest today is Classy Bessels. And as always, our time is going very quickly. If you'd like to WhatsApp us, please do so on 061 0891-895-1019. Classy, I do find that often people contact me afterwards with questions because they don't want to miss out on what my guest is speaking about. So today, definitely with you, everyone's listening into what you're saying. Now, you gave us that ladder experience, the climbing of the ladder, which I think is incredibly important. Viktor Frankl also spoke about the mountain range. And there was a logotherapist who put it into actual practice and spoke about how this exercise works. That he mentioned it in his book, The Doctor and the Soul. And as she said, you've got to visualize your life as a mountain range and identify the people who have really impacted you. So she said, visualize the range. Imagine your entire life laid out before you as a sweeping range. Look at the peaks. Think of the people who have touched your life. What are the lessons they have taught you? How have they been an example to you? And then you place these individuals, such as, you know, people who have been mentors or whatever that you've learned from them on the mountain peaks. And I was thinking of something, I know that you are very fond of the Stoics. And I was thinking of something that Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. And when you mentioned that about your brother, I thought to myself, you know, how many people at the end of their lives do wonder if their life has had meaning. And I think this exercise is actually quite a good exercise because you do look at the peaks and then you look at the values and what are the values that they actually brought into you. What is your own legacy? And those often we look at the valleys, the peaks and the valleys, and look at what has taken you out of those valleys. What has helped you, your own strengths, reach towards the mountain tops? How would you like to appear if you were on someone's mountain range? That's something to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, beautiful. It's beautiful.
And Socrates, in his questioning, he says, what shared values did these people possess? And how has the example of their life empowered or influenced your own path?
Yeah. You know, and so I'm now listening to you, and I, you know, what I said earlier, I always try and make things simple for myself. So I'm listening to you, and an example came up. There was this guy, he was the prime minister of the Tibetan exile community. So when the Dalai Lama decided to split his spiritual duties with political duties, he established a government in exile, and they had to appoint a prime minister, and they were soliciting candidates for this prime minister. And there was this Tibetan who was teaching law. He was a Harvard Law PhD professor. So he was teaching law. He was a PhD in Harvard, in America, American passport. Lobsang Sangay was his name. He put his hand up. So now I'm in India with a group of school children from South Africa. And he's telling us his story that he had to come from America to Dharamsala in India to do this job as the prime minister for the Tibetan exile community, earning $645 a month living in India. So now picture, where he came from, corporate jets and the fancy cars, to this little village place in India. And one of the children said to him, "Sir, did you have to sacrifice a lot coming from America to India to come and do this job?" And he said, "I'm not making a sacrifice. I'm making a contribution."
Hmm.
And for me, that summed up attitude in such a beautiful way, that I'm walking in these mountains, I've got my valleys and I've got my peaks and I've got all these people, but what contribution am I making?
Mm.
And sometimes that contribution can be small. It's not necessarily shifting. We can't all shift the world on its axis, but I can phone someone. I can make someone a cup of tea. I can be nice. I can smile. You know, I can stop and listen. There are so many ways of making small contributions. Now, this legacy you spoke about, yes, we want that powerful legacy, but it has to be built brick by brick, day by day. It has to be built. And it gets built by little things like making a cup of tea for somebody.
Or greeting somebody on the side of the road, you know. I was driving here today and a car was trying to cross and there was a lot of traffic, so I stopped and the cars behind me started hooting. And not that that bothered me much, but you know, the person needed to get across the road and it did nothing to me to give him a minute of my time, even though I was stopping people behind me to allow him to go. And you know, as he went past me, he actually clapped with both hands, and I kind of wanted to say, please hold on to the steering wheel. Otherwise, I'm really going to be in trouble. But it was, you know what? It was a nice feeling because I kind of had a bit of a chuckle to myself as I'm telling you the story. You know, when I saw him clapping his hands, I laughed, you know, and waved him on, kind of thing. But it was a nice feeling. And I think that's often what we're missing in our lives, that it's those little times that can lift our spirits up.
Beautiful. I mean, you just demonstrated point five, walk at your own pace. You decided, I'm going to stop. I'm going to let this person pass. The rest of the world can blow their horns if they want, but I'm stopping to give this person a break. Beautiful.
Walking at
Walk
my
at your
own
own
pace,
pace.
that's number five.
Yes.
I love that. You know, if anyone wants to actually see Classy on a Zoom, you can do so. The Viktor Frankl Institute of South Africa is actually running conversations at the moment, and everyone's give you can I see that everyone's invited to these, Classy. I've been going on them. It's Real Stories of Discovering Meaning. And they're on a Tuesday. When is the next one? I think the 17th of June is the next one.
Yes,
If you'd,
yes, yes.
you know what, I'll put this link in on the Chai FM website that you can have a look for if you want to see Classy in person giving a story. Because over 15 years, Classy's guided more than 40 expeditions to the Tibetan exile community in India and treks to Everest Base Camp in Nepal. And he tells the story of each journey. So it's wonderful stories to listen to. Right, I'm getting back to you in a moment, Classy.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Classy Vessels. Classy's in Stellenbosch, but we've been seeing each other on Zoom, and it's so good to see you, Classy. Classy, you know, when I was actually looking up different things about Viktor Frankl and his love of the mountains, I realized something that I hadn't realized before. Do you remember when he was taken into the concentration camps? He was stripped of all his clothing, and in his clothing he had sewn his manuscript, his logotherapy manuscript. I didn't realize that he also had his medal as a guide in for if a mountain guide that he was given, and he said those were his cherished possessions, the manuscript and this his medal of a guide. Did you know that, Classy?
No, I didn't realize that. I know he had a medal. I know he got given a mountaineering medal for some of the routes that he's climbed, but I didn't realize he carried that with him. That's
Yes,
interesting.
and it was quite an, I can't even pronounce how you pronounce the medal, but I found it very interesting that it was so important to him. And I think that the mountains actually, in his time in the concentration camps, gave him probably some respite, the thought of the mountains. And he came back until he was very old. He carried on climbing and loved it. So, you know, his mountain exercise, I think, is very good. I wrote down how you pronounce his thing, but I can't find it right now. But oh, here we are. It's called the Donauland Alpine Pin, and he had earned it as a mountain climbing guide. So,
Yes.
and yeah, when he was ordered to throw it into the pile, he was a very upset by that. And of course, you and I both know his story, that he then had to pick up a tattered old coat, and in the coat pocket was a scrap of paper, a torn page from the Jewish prayer book, Shema Yisrael, Hear O Israel, which is the prayer. And that helped him get through a lot. You know, I know that at the moment in the world we're going through a lot of tough times, but there was a story I came across which was very interesting about an Israeli guy. And it said that it was a long time ago, but it came up on one of my social pages now. And it said just 300 meters from the top of the world, he turned back. In 2012, Nadav Ben Yehuda, a 24-year-old Israeli climber, was moments away from reaching the summit of Mount Everest, a dream many never achieve. Then he saw something that changed everything. A Turkish climber, Aydin Ermak, was lying in the snow, suffering from severe altitude sickness and close to certain doom. I'm reading this to you, so hang on a sec. While others continued towards the summit, Nadav made a different choice. He gave up his lifelong dream. He stayed with the man and helped carry him down the mountain for hours in freezing, deadly conditions. He didn't reach the top that day, but he saved a life. Isn't that a beautiful story?
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. He absolutely reached the top that day. It was a different top. I mean, to save someone's life, to actually put your own selfish objective of I want to climb to the top of Everest aside and save someone else's life. I mean, isn't that a true achievement and a true summit?
Isn't that so? And you know, funny enough, there was a picture of him with the man he saved, and someone had written there, and sometimes that's the highest point a person can reach. It's exactly as you say, to a life testimony that no amount of words can ever stop. Wow.
Yeah, because you know, there's something, I mean, the other layer nuance that is in this whole conversation, that reaching the top of a mountain, like reaching the top of Everest, is such a selfish act. Actually, if you think of it, it's actually, who are you doing it for?
Yeah.
And then Nadav went, he was going on his own mission to try, but he reached a noble goal and a noble peak by saving someone's life.
And may we all look to reach out to one another, Klasi. Before we end, I'm being told to wrap up. Please, will you give me your details?
Streetschool.co.za. They can find me there, or classic 1A1S at streetschool.co.za. That's my email address. Yeah.
And they can find you on LinkedIn under Klasi Wessels. Yes. And are you on Facebook, Klasi?
I don't use it a lot, but it's there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so there. On LinkedIn, I see you post quite often and wonderful things. Thank you so much, Klasi. How would you like to end?
Just saying that life is not a race to the summit. It's a journey towards awareness, meaning, and being fully human.
Thank you, Klasi. Thank you for doing that. And thank you for being part of my ladder of life. And may we continue to climb towards the summit together and with people who are meaningful in our lives and people that we may not even know yet, but will be with us. Thank you, Klasi. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Vusi. And thank you, Mukundi.